And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 702. Getting you ready for some draft champions action here. And it was fun last couple years, actually. The Toolshed gang has been here to help break down some National League and American League prospects. We decided to make it two episodes this year. It's actually probably for the better. Instead of a 2.5-hour marathon, we can kind of break things up a bit here and have some fun. So I have one half of the Toolshed podcast, Toolshed Patreon, the creator and guy that runs with it all at the Dynasty Dugout over on Substack. And you can find him on Twitter at Chris Clegg, M-I-L-B. Chris Clegg, how you doing, my friend?
I am doing good, Bubba. Good to chat with you again. It was good to see you out in Arizona, and always good to be on your show.
Yeah, most definitely. I kind of half plugged what you got going on. Give the listeners the full run through, because I'm not kidding. At Substack, there's multiple things daily between you and Beck. So let people know what they got going on.
Sure. Yeah. So pretty much every day there's, you know, some form of content during the regular season. It's recapping pretty much everything across the minor leagues. Off season is a little different. I'm working through each team's top 30 prospects, writing those up. So finished up the National League and just dropped the Athletics today. So on to the American League now. So we're going to talk National League today. So that's perfect because I've written up about near 500 prospects for the National League. So I think I'm a little versed there. So we're good to go.
Yeah, I'd say you're ready to roll for this. So for those that might be new to this format, it's basically we're going to go over every team in the National League and obviously not every prospect. It's more who do we need to know, like in a 50-round draft and hold, 15-team leagues, you're drafting 50 players a roster, a lot of prospects. People take quote-unquote risks or gambles on prospects. Some have a more likelihood of getting to the bigs. Some maybe are kind of longer shots. I know I've had people reference the shows we did last year, Chris. Like, they take notes. Like, they love these. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on these. So Chris is going to mention the relevant ones here. Not like if you want the whole list of top prospects from the org, go to his Substack. That's what I'd recommend. We're not going to get to those today. But let's start in your backyard. Your team, we'll go to the NL East, the Atlanta Braves. And the first name you put up here has got me pumped because with Travis d'Arnaud leaving town to LA, this opened the door for a potential catcher. So what do you see in Drake Baldwin this year?
Yeah, so Baldwin fully broke out this year. He's always been one of those guys that's been like a under-the-hood darling with really good exit velocities. And everybody kind of took notice this year. One, because when you look at Braves prospect stats, they're always going to be pretty rough for hitters at the lower levels because their hitting environments at home are really bad for low A, for high A, for double A. And you finally get to triple A and Gwinnett, and their hitters can shine. It'll be interesting. Their double A is moving next year from Mississippi to Columbus, Georgia. So I'll be curious to see how that shakes out. But, you know, we saw it with Baldwin this year. He had 72 games in triple A. He looked more than ready with the bat. / 298, 407, 484 with 12 home runs in 72 games. Double A, he had four more home runs, 36 extra base hits on the year. Contact skills are really good. And I think that for a catcher, when you look at the kind of profile that he has to be able to make the kind of contact he does, 81% overall, 85% in zone, those marks are very strong, especially for a hitter that was in double and triple A. And you factor in that he's a catcher, even better. Low chase rate, he's going to run high OBPs, and the power, really good too, at an average exit velocity north of 92 miles an hour and ninth percentile above 106. So both those are plus or better from the power standpoint. I think Baldwin also made strides behind the plate, so he's looks more than ready to catch in the big leagues. Maybe not every day, but I do think this is a perfect situation now. And I think this is the reason why they didn't bring Travis d'Arnaud back. I mean, d'Arnaud was a cog in that lineup for years, and he was always in big spots. They decided to let him walk. His price for the Angels was not that high. So this shows me that there was some confidence in Baldwin by the team that he could catch multiple days a week in Atlanta and maybe even fit in some DH roles, depending on Ozuna and how that goes. You know, that lineup is obviously tough to get into, just given the fact that top to bottom is pretty good. But I do think that Drake Baldwin's more than ready. The bat's more than ready for sure. It could be a situation where he does platoon. Obviously, he's not going to be – Baldwin's a left-handed bat, so you think, like, how does it fit with Murphy? They're not going to catch Murphy only days when he faces left-handed pitching. It's not going to happen. But I do think Baldwin can catch 3 days a week and probably have his bat in the lineup 4 days a week. And it, for a catcher, like,
that's good.
That'll play. You know, mm-hmm. So I think that he's got the skills and I think he's more than ready.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking when, because I've always been a fan of the backup in Atlanta, just because, you know, whatever the plus and minuses of Sean Murphy, there's still like almost 80 to 100 games that the backup plays every single year between catching, DH. Like, it's just a thing. And in the landscape, I've mentioned it many times now, is it, with catchers, it's almost like running backs in fantasy football, is you have like a handful of elites and then a bunch of committees. And that's kind of the way it goes now. So if this Baldwin, if Drake can hit, he'll get plenty of chances, like you said. So that's why I was very intrigued. I thought the same thing when Travis went left. I'm like, well, they trust the kid. That's the way I see it. They're saving their money and going elsewhere. You got a couple more players down here for Atlanta. A player we've discussed for a few years now, it feels like, that maybe breaks through, and then a newbie. So who else do you got for the Braves?
Yeah, so AJ Smith-Shawver is one that's obviously been around a while. He just turned 22 years old, though. That's like
crazy.
As of like
been forever.
As of last week. So, like, yeah, he came up to the majors in 2023 as a 20-year-old. Was rushed. I think it hurt his development path a little bit this year. He was hurt all year this year as well, so I think that's something that affected him. Had an oblique injury. Dealt with a couple other things that weren't public, and I kind of attribute his season to that. Also, it was kind of odd where the Braves kind of stripped away a sweeper that he had been working on. Like, he had had success with it. They kind of pulled it back. There's some weird things they did with his pitch mix in the minors, just trying to figure out what worked best with him. But I'm still very much in on AJ Smith-Shawver. I know that it's easy to get prospect fatigue, especially it's like, oh yeah, it's been 2 years since this guy debuted and he hasn't really done anything in the majors. They put him in pretty bad spots all year. And even when he debuted, if we're being honest, I mean, sent him out west for his MLB debut in Arizona in 2023. They threw him in a playoff game in 2023 in Philadelphia. That was a nightmare. This year, he pitched just one game in the majors against Chicago, the Cubs, and then in the playoff spot against the Padres too, out west. So I feel like he's just kind of been jerked around a bit, but I'm not off of him. And the fastball's still good. He saw a few mile an hour increase on that early in the year, which was something interesting to watch. Like, the velocity didn't stick all year, but he still averaged north of 95 miles an hour. 18 inches of IVB, which was, you know, plus from his release height, low vertical approach angle. That pitch plays really well. 6'8" of extension on that. Like, I really like the fastball still. He made major strides with the changeup too, which I think that was something he needed to do. 44% whiff rate on his changeup this year. Love to see that. It's 85, 84 miles an hour. Good fading action, low spin rates, very deceptive. That slider still plays. I mean, it's a pretty hefty wipeout pitch in the curveball he added back in 2023, continued to develop. It was a nasty two-plane pitch with, you know, about negative 15 inches of IVB, so heavy drop in depth and 11 inches of sweep on it. It's a true, like, five velocity band kind of arm where he's got five velo spots he can go to at times. He was hurt by home runs this year. If you look at the surface stats, he allowed 20 home runs, 9 of those coming on the fastball. I think that one, the AAA pitching environment was kind of wild this year. Everybody talks about the PCL, but the International League, which is the East Coast for AAA, is equally as bad at this point for pitchers. And it showed. I mean, he got hit hard, the home runs that he allowed. If he can just kind of work on the fastball location a bit, I think that it's going to play. And currently, got him penciled in the fifth spot in Atlanta. Whether that happens or not, like, they're prone to go out and sign someone or trade for somebody like they did Sale last year. But we know that they mix and match spots a lot. And I think that AJ Smith-Shawver's price is depleted enough where he becomes a pretty decent target now.
You mentioned the AAA pitching environment, especially even on the East Coast. How do you go about evaluating that talent then when you're looking at these players? And like you basically gave a great example with Shawver, like what you saw there. But like in general, we talk about all these, and we'll talk about more obviously, but how do you kind of look at that and you know, keep some optimism, I guess, when they come up and we see like a near 5 ERA and whatnot?
Yeah, so it's definitely tough. And I think you have to kind of look at it on like a pitch level basis. And, you know, under the hood, there's just much better stuff than, you know, the surface level suggests. And, you know, with somebody like AJ Smith-Shawver or really any pitcher for that matter, like, you know, what was the issue? Like, the home runs were really the biggest issue. I think that was just a little bit of pitch location with him. And I kind of attribute that a bit to injury. Like, high riding fastball, leaving it over the heart of the plate, you got to pitch it up. And so from like a player like AJ Smith-Shawver, like I'm looking under the hood and seeing like, okay, there's still five pitches. He's an above average strike thrower. For the most part, he commands those pitches well. It's just when he does miss, like he's hit hard. And that's obviously going to matter in the majors too. Like major league hitters aren't going to miss on your missed fastball. So I think there's just a clear, I like being able to identify like what went wrong and what can that pitcher do. So like with AJ Smith-Shawver, I think you just clean up the location of the fastball a little bit and suddenly we're looking at a lot of different results. Also think the ball's a little different in AAA too, so got to factor that in. It's annoying that they throw different balls at every levels and Major League changes the ball every year, but it is what it is. And so we have to kind of take every data point possible and try to form the best opinion possible.
Yep. No, that's fair. No, I was just curious because it's, for the novices that don't know prospects like us, we're sitting there, we just look at a stat line on FanGraphs or whatever, and you're just like, No, this guy's junk. And it's like, no, maybe not. Maybe not. You got one more here for Atlanta, Drew Hackenberg. What do you got from him?
Yeah, Hackenberg was the sneaky name here. Obviously, Hurston Waldrop's kind of the easy one to point to, but I think they slow play Waldrop's development a little more. They definitely want to develop Waldrop as a starter, and I think that they keep him down majority of the year. But I think Drew Hackenberg's the sneaky one, where he was a second rounder in 2023, sophomore out of Virginia Tech. The surface numbers at VT were bad, and everybody said, why did the Braves draft this guy? They give him an overslot deal, and Hackenberg's development has been highly impressive. I saw him early in May. He was sitting like 90 to 93, and the last 2 months of the season, he averaged 94, touching 96. So like he added significant velocity all year while throwing a significant amount of innings. He threw 129 innings last year and added velo. And it was better towards the end of the year, which is kind of wild to see. But he hits his spots exceptionally well. Like he's a command first type. But now when you have the increased velo, okay, like we're now looking at a completely different pitcher. Now he's averaging 94, touching 96. There's a four and two seam variation. Locates the sinker down pretty well. It's a kind of slurvy curveball, throws it to both lefties and righties. It's pretty heavy sweep, good depth on it. Throws a cutter and a changeup as well. So it's a deep arsenal. It's your typical Braves draft and develop type guy that they can push quickly. We've seen this kind of mold with like a Spencer Schwellenbach. Obviously, Hackenberg doesn't have the power, I guess, the fastball velocity that Schwellenbach does. But to see that increase, I think, is pretty substantial this year. He had a 3.07 ERA on the year in those 129 innings. He reached AAA by the end of the year, pushed from high all the way up to triple. Heavy ground ball profile as well. So when he's not missing bats, 54% ground ball rate, a lot of weak contact. You talk about AJ Smith-Shawver's home run problem. Hackenberg allowed two home runs all year. 547 batters faced and two home runs allowed while striking out 144. So it's kind of the underrated profile in the Braves system that, people kind of just push to the side. They're like, all right, Braves always have these guys, but this is a major league starter. He's got a starter frame. He's a workhorse. And I think they're ready to push him in the rotation next year to see what he's got.
And I pulled up his page while you were talking, and those two home runs were at high A. He didn't give up any at double or triple A. Like they were quote unquote the better talent. He, there's still very good talent at all levels, depending on who you're facing. But the better talent, he's still shut down in the long ball department, at least, which is very crazy to hear. Just this could be like a 30-second at most answer if you want. Charlie Morton still wants to come back and pitch. How do you think that affects the Braves at all?
Oh, man, I have no idea where he lands. You think the natural spot would be Atlanta, where he's been comfortable. Yeah, exactly. And that's my fear, is that that happens. Because if they sign him, like, he's going to pitch as long as he's healthy. And that obviously takes a spot. They're also stretching out Grant Holmes to potentially start. That's kind of been noted that they're going to see what they've got at least and see if they can stretch him out. Strider comes back. Like, it gets crowded really quick. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, how much of a discount Morton would have to take to come back to Atlanta. Payroll's kind of tight. They're trying to shore up shortstop position and a couple other spots. So, if Morton takes a deal like under 10 mil, then 1 year wouldn't shock me to see him back in Atlanta, which would kind of be a detriment to a lot of these young guys.
Yeah, that's the only reason why I asked. Someone's going to sign him. He's going to pitch all year, like you said, until he gets hurt. He's always said he wants Atlanta or kind of Tampa. I think those are the two because those are close at home. And the Braves, if it's cheap enough, it makes sense. But like the other point, as you mentioned, there's Holmes, there's Schwellenbach's fine, but there's Holmes, there's Ian Anderson, there's Shaver. You just mentioned Hackenberg. There's a long list, you know, Elder, all these guys that have had a chance that had hype behind them at one point. It makes doing DCs right now, you're sitting there looking at the board to pass pick like 500 going, huh, this is going to be interesting. I just took Charlie Morton around 38. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it, like roll with it. Now, it doesn't make me feel great because I also like, you know, the other Braves we mentioned. So we'll see. I just didn't know if you maybe had heard something. Let's go to the New York Mets here. And they got a lot of young hitters, especially, you know, Mauricio, who got hurt last year. Very high expectations for him. A couple guys that had some fun in the fall league are on this list as well. So what do you see when you look at the Mets?
Yeah, I think Mauricio is obviously the biggest question mark here. Obviously, as you mentioned, did not play in 2024. He tore his ACL in the Dominican Winter League last year and nothing. He actually, as of like 3 weeks ago, they came out and said he's not started baseball activities, which is wild. That's a little bit concerning. Obviously, you hope he gets back to 100% for 2025, but I wouldn't count on it. But the hope is that it kind of kills his price in drafts because the power speed upside is certainly there. Yeah, he's got 20 home run pop pretty easily. He's going to steal you bases. And the contact's improved like over year, like you look at a profile like this and you always have questions. He's aggressive. He chases a lot. But in 2023, his end zone contact rate jumped to 86%, which was pretty notable. Chase rate was 40%. So you got to deal with that. But we've seen hitters make that work. The power is undeniable, though. He had a 109 mile an hour ninth percentile in EV in 2023, which is like better than Junior Caminero. That kind of shows you the kind of power we're looking at with Mauricio. It's just, who knows like where his health is at this point. I was a little bit caught off guard when I saw that report that he hadn't started baseball activities. Obviously he had the ACL surgery, and then he had another surgery back in August, the beginning of this August, where they had cleaned up some scar tissue from that surgery. So it's been a pretty slow process for him. They're still talking like he'll be ready for 2025, but I'd say the fact he hasn't started baseball activities yet, and it's been almost a year since, kind of concerns me a little bit with Mauricio. So yeah, it's a risky play.
A big red flag. If I'm sitting there, especially in a November draft, I know most people are doing their draft champions before they do their fab leagues. That's why we're doing the show now. His ADP is around 480. So it's not like it's free, but it's not cheap at the same time. So it's kind of an in-between deal. Is the next one Ryan Clifford? Is he a potential Big Meat Pete replacement? Or what
Yeah, so that's kind of where I lean there. If Pete Alonso does walk, then that spot's kind of open for Clifford. He's an interesting profile. It's one that's kind of up and down. You look at his numbers in high Brooklyn, which is a terrible place to hit, just given the way the wind blows off and into the park. It just kills all hitters' value in Brooklyn, and he struggled. So in his 31 high games, he hit 216 with a 32% K rate. There's some weird stuff that goes on in that ballpark. He jumps to Double A. And while the slash line was not great, he still got on base at 372 clip, 421 slug, 18 home runs, and 21 doubles in 98 Double-A games. So it's like slightly below average contact skills, but it is big pop. He's put up some pretty big exit velocities north of 113, several others this year over 110. So you look at the profile, it's one that's going to get on base, just given the lower chase rate that he shows. He walked at a clip around 18% this year. And there's good pop. So yeah, I think this, just the power alone, can kind of get him to the majors. And if Pete walks, then Clifford maybe gives you 100 games in New York. Probably not on the opening day roster, but I do think that there's that chance that he's up pretty quickly because it's a pretty advanced bat. And I'm not sure how much more development there is to be had here. So he could be up pretty quick.
All right. What do we got here for a couple of AFL boys, Jet Williams and Drew Gilbert?
Yeah, so Jet's interesting from the standpoint of he's just so versatile. He can play short, he can play second, played a lot of center field in the AFL as well. He was injured most all the year in 2024, so missed pretty substantial time. He came back in August, had 148 plate appearances, and the numbers weren't great. Numbers weren't great in the AFL either, but you kind of look past that given that he had a wrist injury, and those things can be tough to come back and get your timing back right when you're in game action. Yeah, you look at Jet and it's a hit first profile. He doesn't chase. He's going to get on base at a super high clip. He's kind of sneaky power as well. I mean, his exit velocities are close to MLB average, not bad. So for a smaller guy, like he's 5'5", so he's tiny, but he actually can get to some power. I think he's maybe can be a 15 home run bat at peak, but it's a 70 grade runner. He's going to steal you bases. he could steal 30 to 40 bases, and I wouldn't be shocked. I think that he probably starts the year in AAA, but if he shows to be healthy, he could be in that lineup pretty quick, just depending on what they do. Obviously, they have a lot of money to spend, but Jett does have the skills that fantasy players look for, because he's going to hit for average, he's going to steal bases, and he's not a zero in the power department. And he can play multiple positions. So you might have middle infield and outfield, which is pretty valuable with Jett.
Yep, that is pretty nice. What about Drew Gilbert here? Because, yeah, Jett was the one people talk about the most, it felt like, on Twitter during Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, Gilbert's interesting. He's another one that's a bit undersized. He's 5'8" outfielder. He missed a pretty large portion of the season as well with a hamstring injury, and he struggled coming back in AAA. The numbers weren't good at all, but he did hit 10 home runs and had 8 doubles in 56 games. He can get to some power. The exit velocity data was a little bit lower than we were used to this year. And again, I don't know if the hamstring had affected it or not, but he put up some pretty good numbers in the AFL, and the exit velocities did look a little better. You know, Gilbert's a corner outfield profile that's going to have to hit, but he's close. Like, he's already been AAA. They've shown that, you know, they're pretty comfortable with him. He's 24 years old. And if he's healthy, like, it's reasonable to think that he could spend, you know, more than half the season in that Mets outfield, just depending on how it shakes out. Obviously, Soto is in the mix there. This could totally derail half these guys, so that would be concerning. But right now, when you look at it, you see Brandon Nimmo probably locked in a spot. I mean, Starling Marte was not great last year, and you've got Tyrone Taylor. Obviously, they've got to address that, and maybe they do with some pretty big guys. They traded for Jose Siri, so there's still question marks. Soto comes, you know, that's one less spot. So maybe Gilbert's traded. I wouldn't rule that out, but I think Gilbert is an interesting prospect where he's not talked about as much like you mentioned, but I think that there's 18 to 20 home run pop. He's going to hit for a respectable average as well while getting on base at a pretty high clip. So still a profile to like there.
Yeah, good average with 18 to 20 home runs plays quite a bit. So no faulting that, but I could see him being, if the Mets do stay interested in like a Crochet or something, that could be a big piece to go there, yeah. Unfortunately for Gilbert's sake. But yeah, that's where he would land. The last one here is you have a nice looking pitcher who was recently drafted in the second round and had a pretty good looking first year in the minor league level.
Yeah, Brandon Sproat. I thought he was going to debut at the end of last year. And if he hadn't had some bumps in the road in AAA, he probably would have. But he was, for most of the season, one of the better pitching prospects in the game. He ended the year last year with a 3.40 ERA in 116 innings, 131 strikeouts, walked just 9% of batters, 20% K-minus BB. You look, before his move to AAA, he had a 2.05 ERA and a 33% K rate. Fastball, it ticked up a bit from his college days at Florida, set 96 to 98 last year. It plays more as a sinker, like it's a low IVB pitch, 10, 12 inches of horizontal. So it's kind of a sinker, not going to miss a lot of bats. He throws a cutter more often, like it's kind of a gyro slider type pitch. It sits 87. Then he throws another slider with heavy sweep in the mid 80s, up to 15 inches of sweeping action. Pretty distinct curveball with good depth to it. Sproat has a changeup as well. Like, it's good separation from the slider, 88, 89. So you've got about 30 inches of horizontal separation between the slider and the changeup, which is pretty encouraging. And he throws strikes in above average clip. Like, Sproat is kind of the mold of like a high floor, mid rotation type starter, which is very valuable. And he showed the upside of what he can be. University of Florida is notorious for not knowing how to utilize pitchers. That was absolutely the case with Sproat. It's the case with Hurston Waltrip as well. And Sproat, we see getting a decent pitching org, and they rework the pitch mix, sequence better, and the results are there. I think he could give you 120 innings in the majors next year. I don't see, like, there's spots here. This rotation always needed help. Yep. And even if they sign a few guys, you look at where it sits right now, and you're looking at guys like David Peterson, Paul Blackburn, Tyler McGill, Jose Budo. They can sign a few guys, and there's still room for Brandon Sproat. So he's definitely a target in DCs. I'm curious where his ADP is. I've not looked, but I think he's a great target.
He just went in round 35 in my draft. ADP is 507 right now.
Yeah, I like that shot there for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned a Mets pitcher, and then you hit the highlight at the end where I was already going to be like, they're always looking for help, always looking for help in that rotation. Let's go to Philadelphia, talking about rotational help. Andrew Painter, we were all like hyped on him going into last year, gets hurt, or was hurt previously to that, whatever, whichever one. goes to the AFL to get some extra innings in, AFL pitcher of the year, essentially. What are the expectations for Andrew Painter with the Phils this year?
Yeah, and, you know, they've come out and said, they're like, you know, we don't know how many innings he's going to throw. Is he going to start with the team? And so I think that it's fair to say that Painter probably starts in AAA this year. But I wouldn't be shocked if he goes the Paul Skeens route. They want to build him up. They want to have him healthy for the postseason because this is a postseason team. And I think that the best way to go about it is probably let him have a month in AAA, build up, come up, throw 4 to 5 innings each start, and then slowly build towards that postseason. I think 120 innings is probably a fair amount. Painter at this point is about 18 months removed from TJ. No, he had TJ actually in June, I think. They kind of postponed it because they went that rest and recover out. But by opening day, I mean, he's well removed from that surgery. And ultimately, he's incredible. I mean, I think he's the best pitching prospect in the game. Saw him in the AFL. The stuff was fully back. I mean, he's sitting 97, touching 101. It's just all around good arsenal. Slider looked good. His changeup and curve both looked good coming back. I mean, he was the best pitcher in the AFL. Got up to 3 innings by season's end, or the AFL end of the season. So I like to see that. I think that Painter steps in that rotation pretty quickly, and he's going to make an impact, kind of the opposite of the Mets rotation where it is pretty crowded.
Yes.
But I mean, they've openly said they don't want Taijuan Walker in the rotation, which is kind of weird to say, but that was a quote I saw the other day. Maybe they kind of mix and match the spot. I've seen them link to Crochet as well, which then that leaves questions too. But healthy Painter is going to pitch in the majors, and a healthy Painter is going to be very, very good.
Yeah, I'm with you. ADP's 285, so people are thinking he's very, very good and hoping he's up pretty soon is what that one comes down to. Otto Kemp, is this a potential Alec Bohm replacement with all the rumblings about seems like the Phillies are kind of getting over Alec Bohm these days.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Kemp probably fits best in like a utility role. He can play all over. Played all the infield spots. He can play the outfield. He's played everywhere, which I think makes him highly valuable. He reached AAA this year, put up a pretty impressive 285, 392, 489 slash, 16 homers, 24 doubles, 9 triples, and he stole 20 bases as well. Saw him in the AFL. I mean, he hit a ball 116 in the AFL, which kind of absurd raw power when you see that. And I know obviously we say the AFL hitters environment's hitter friendly. Yes, but still to put up a 116 exit velocity is huge. And so Kemp's a guy that he can fit a lot of places and have a lot of positional eligibility. He could certainly take over an Alec Bohm spot, but I also think he can play outfield in a pinch. He can slot over to second base if Bryson Stott needs a day off. He even plays some shortstop. Like, he plays all over, and the bat's really good. He's 25 years old, so there's no reason to keep him down in the minors considering the progression we saw this year. Contact skills are good. It's really low chase rates. Kim's kind of a sneaky guy here where you may can get him at the back end of a draft, and you just hope that he can get 300 plate appearances and fill in for some injuries here and there. I know that lineup's stacked. It's hard to crack into, but he kind of strikes me as a guy that will play the ultimate utility role for them.
No, I like that because the Phillies have shown a liking to like that with Edmundo Sosa, Weston Wilson up there right now. They kind of like that player, the versatility. So very interesting. Let's talk Washington Nationals here. This one should be pretty quick. So we've talked about these guys a few times, but Dylan Cruz, Cade Cavalli. Are we finally getting Cade Cavalli this year?
I hope so. Cavalli was a weird one where he should have been back this year, and he comes back, and I was actually ready to see him. Like, he was rehabbing down here in Greenville, and he gets dead arm and the flu like in the matter of a couple of weeks, and he just never came back. Like, he was so good back before TJ, first pro season in 2021. He made it AAA. He looked really good in 2022, reached the majors, and then in 2023 before spring training, like, I thought Cavalli was full breakout mode because he looked really good in spring training before having TJ. Before he was injured, fastball was sitting 96, could touch triple digits, throws a curve, slider, change, really good secondaries. It's just pretty incredible stuff. How's the command look coming back? I think that's a major question mark, but if he's healthy, Cavalli's going to be in this rotation. It's just a matter of, can he get over these arm injuries? It's kind of wild, but yeah, Dylan Cruz, don't think we need to talk much about, obviously. he's a guy that everybody knows well at this point, but you know, talk prospects like Dylan Cruz is still one. He'll be rookie of the year eligible next year, and he's going to play every day.
Yeah, he's an absolute beast. ADP is 141. So everyone's on. I think my recent, or my Gladiator the other night, I took him as like my third outfielder. So yeah, I'm on board with some Dylan Cruz. Let's wrap up the AL East here. The Miami Marlins, they had at one point, Chris, I know you remember this, on the trade deadline, I think they traded like 2/3 of their roster or something in one day. So prospects were probably getting a little antsy getting the call around there. I'm just going to leave this one open to you because you have a player they traded for, De Los Santos, who I thought should have been up last year and somehow wasn't once he got traded for. A stud catcher in Ramirez that I'm pumped about. I'm going to leave the floor to you because you got four really good-looking Marlins prospects here, at least for fantasy potentially.
Yeah, so Griffin Conine's name I put first because he did come up last year. He had a pretty successful debut. I mean, he hit 3 home runs and 89 plate appearances. He showed the ability to hit some doubles, 4 doubles, a triple. The contact skills are a major question mark with Conine. He's always struggled with that, but actually in the majors, the contact skills looked pretty respectable. It was interesting, much higher than we'd seen the minors at any point. But, you know, Conine's somebody that I think will probably play on the strong side of a platoon, at least for the first half of the year, until someone comes up and proves they can play the outfield. He's already proved it. He's 27 years old, left-handed power bat. They've kind of offed pretty much everybody else in this outfield. So who's left? Like, he's going to play, and they don't have any imminent prospects knocking on the door in that outfield. You know, Brian De La Cruz is now gone. He obviously was traded to the Pirates at the deadline. There's that spot. Kyle Stowers is probably going to play. He's interesting, but there's nobody else that's kind of sitting there ready to take that spot from Griffin Conine. So like him a lot. Augustin Ramirez is kind of a similar case where he reached AAA. This team is running out Nick Fortes at catcher. They've got a guy on the bench right now, Johnny Pareda, who I'm not familiar with at all. So there's a spot for Augustin Ramirez to step in and perform. Now, he was incredible with the Yankees before the trade. He slumped a bit early on in AAA, and then he really picked things up the last month of the season with AAA Jacksonville. That's the Marlins AAA after the trade. He's interesting. The swing path can get a little flat at times. He can hit the ball on the ground too much, but we saw the power. I mean, last season, he hit 25 home runs. He stole some bags, too. He's an interesting athlete for a catcher where he's not afraid to steal bases. He was caught just twice, and he had, doing my math here, he had 22 stolen bases last year with 2 caught stealings. A catcher that can run and hit for power, even if he gives you, I'll say, 8 steals in the majors, that's really valuable out of that spot for fantasy purposes. Ramirez contact rates are fine. They're not going to jump off the page at you, but they're good enough for him to be a major league catcher at that. So I think he's pretty ready for that job, and nobody's blocking him.
Especially with Fortes. They're like, what are we doing? What are we doing, guys?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where we probably see him up in May, and I wouldn't be shocked.
Yep, with you. What are we thinking on Davis and De Los Santos? Because like I said, he got traded at the deadline. Nothing but raw power comes out of this guy's bat. And I'm looking at who's playing. Like Jonah Bride, okay, he was serviceable. I'm not going to say he wasn't. Like, he was serviceable. But if we're thinking future here, what are we doing? So what's your thoughts on what we see from De Los Santos this year?
Yeah, so De Los Santos obviously is probably the most polarizing prospect in baseball because you have a brass of people that just think he's the best hitter in the world, and then you look under the hood and that's just not the case. On the surface, I mean, pretty dang good. 294 average, 571 slug last year, and again, he spent half the year as a 20-year-old and reached AAA, so pretty impressive stuff. He struck out just 24% of the time. Like, okay, like, that'll play. And then you factor in at 40 home runs, like, the juice is obviously in the bat, and we know that. The power metrics are off the charts here. But there's a major flaw with Davison and his ability to make contact. I know that's not reflective in the strikeout rate or the batting average, but De Los Santos chases about as much as any prospect, ran a 45% chase rate in the minors last year, which is kind of wild. We saw the contact rate sit around 63%, 76% in zone. So those are pretty low. When he connects, he does damage. I mean, the power's off the charts, 108, 9th percentile. That's top of the scale, but he also hits the ball on the ground a lot. So it'll be interesting to see how major league pitchers exploit him. I mean, he kind of reminds me a bit of Jake Berger, like early in his career. Berger's obviously made some progression. De Los Santos is going to run low OBP, but who's blocking him at this point? Like, they traded for him for a reason, and I think they're going to give him a chance pretty early in the season. So you draft him just for the power, knowing that there's probably not going to give you much else. If he hits 240, like, that'll play if he gives you enough power. But you have to know there's a downside as well with his profile, and there's definitely some risk with it.
Yeah, and the ADP is not too bad at 462. So it's interesting. If you believe he can turn the corner there and go full Jake Berger, then you're pretty pumped. And you got one last one here to add to Mazur. What are we thinking here?
Yeah, so Mazur's interesting because he was obviously with the Padres. He made his major league debut. He made some pretty interesting pitch mix changes with Miami and a lot of different results at that. So we saw him, the usage on his four-seam drop significantly with Miami. 57% with San Diego, 42% with Miami. Slider usage also dropped, 30% to 23%, but they upped his curve usage. Curve up from 7% with San Diego to 17% with Miami. Change up as well, saw a 4% increase. And he started using his sinker a bit more too, which was pretty notable. They also changed his release point pretty substantially. They lowered his four-seam release height, and he's throwing about a foot further outside, and he saw a pretty notable increase of IVB on the fastball, which is kind of weird to see when you lower the release height, but they were able to tweak enough where the pitch worked. Every pitch moved noticeably different with Miami, given the changes in his release point, and they played significantly better. While the results, when you look at it, were like, okay, like, we didn't see a change in results. I think a full off season for Mazur will be notable. Now, he's somebody that's got good command. You get the arsenal working. The questions is already, we're always kind of surrounding his fastball and could the four seam work? And we saw the four seam get obliterated in the majors. But with the changes, I think there's a chance that it works. And I think there's a sneaky chance he could get in this rotation. Now, we know the Marlins always have good depth in their rotation. They've got Sandy coming back. That complicates things a little more too. But we know that back in that rotation stays injured. Lizardo can't stay healthy. Edward Cabrera can't stay healthy. Ryan Weathers can't stay healthy. Braxton Garrett hasn't been healthy. I think it could be wide open. So Adam Mazur might be that guy that could jump in and take a spot in the rotation.
No, it makes sense. Always a moving door. It feels like you said, at the back end of that rotation. All right, let's head to the NL Central here, starting with the Milwaukee Brewers. They already have the best catcher in baseball right now, but he also likes to DH and play other positions. So what are our thoughts on Jefferson Quiro to potentially Arquero to take the spot in Milwaukee?
Yeah, I think Quiro is definitely on the verge of promotion. Now, he's interesting because he was going to make the majors in 2024. He was slated to begin the year in AAA, or he did begin the year in AAA as a 21-year-old. He had one plate appearance on opening day. He walked, he was picked off, he slid back into first, dislocated his shoulder and tore his labrum, out for the year. So it's just kind of a crazy progression because he's so advanced with the bat too behind the plate, and he's a solid catcher at that. Strong feel for contact. He's got pretty good juice in the bat too. And behind the plate, he's exceptional. I mean, some scouts give him a 70 behind the plate with a glove, and he's definitely a 70 arm. I've got pop times on him that are easily 70 grade. He threw out 35% of runners in 2023 when he was healthy. I'm not sure the value's caught up here with Quiro. How much time does he need to rehab, I guess, is the question. And can he find the spot at catcher? I wouldn't rule it out. We obviously know, as you mentioned, Contreras is going to DH some. I think that benefits both parties to have Contreras sit some and just DH and let Quiro, who's a strong defensive catcher, come in, whose bat is also really good. So I think Quiro is definitely one to watch out for. And I put a pitcher as well, another rotation that they've got some question marks at the back end. Aaron Ashby's never pitched as a starter. He can't stay healthy. And I don't really think he's good out of a starter's role. So Logan Henderson is that next guy up for me, where he's an undersized righty. He's short, like 5'10". He doesn't look like a starting pitcher, but Henderson is a really good arm. Oblique injury kept him out early in the year, or he might have debuted by season's end, but split time between double and triple A, 81 innings, he had a 3.32 ERA, 28% strikeout minus walk rate, which is wild. So 104 strikeouts in 81 innings. Command is pristine. It's as good of command as you'll find from pitchers in the minor leagues. He had a 16% swinging strike rate. Fastball is impressive. It's a very low release height, like kind of outlierish. 5'3" release height, 18 inches of IVB. Like, that's unheard of to be able to create that kind of ride from his low release height. And he sits low 90s, like 93 average, but it plays exceptionally well. Changeup, Brewers develop changeup guys, and that's exactly what Logan Henderson is. It's not the airbender of a Devin Williams, but it's a plus changeup or better. It's that 18 inches of arm side movement, just kind of ridiculous. 11 miles an hour separation off the fastball, which helps it play and just kind of dies in midair. There's a cutter, slider kind of hybrid in the upper 80s as well. I think that this is a profile that's ready. I mean, he has nothing else to prove at this point. He'll be 23. He's had success at the highest level of the minors. And I think they're ready to see what he's got in the majors. And I'm not sure Aaron Ashby's the answer. So Logan Henderson, kind of a sneaky target.
I like that, because I was going to say Ashby, DL Hall, they haven't really wanted to commit to the back end there. And we've all had optimism on them, so why not try another type thing? And then the Kiro thing, I think he's very live, because last year was Gary Sanchez. It was like Caratini the year before. And then they'll get a handful of at-bats, so it's not a bad look. Chicago Cubs, the first name you got on this list. If you're on social media, you cannot miss the name Matt Shaw these days, as he is lighting Team USA. Well, that's over now. They finished that the whole tournament, but crushing all over the place. And people are quite optimistic on what could be this year. What are your thoughts on Matt Shaw?
Yeah, I think Shaw's biggest question for me is, like, what do they do with Nico Horner? Which I think they trade him. Wouldn't shock me at all. And, you know, the crazy thing is, I'm not sure Isak Paredes is the answer for them at third. They traded for him. That trade looks like a major lose-lose right now with Morel and him. But at the end of the day, you know, I think Shaw's going to find a spot. He's just such a high-floor bat. He hits for power. The exit velocities are well above average. He gets the ball in the air often. He gets to the pool side, which gets to the home run power. It's above average or better contact skills. It's just like as well-rounded or safe of a profile as you'll find. And, you know, he finished the year very strong in AAA post All-Star break. He just got better and better all year. Post All-Star break, 335 average, 417 OBP, 585 slug, 11 homers and 23 extra base hits. Strikeout rate dropped below 15%. The underlying data backs it. You know, you see Shaw, like you mentioned, he's all over social media. I think he's more than ready at this point. And, you know, whether he fits in at second, whether he fits in at third, like, I don't know. But he's going to find a spot, and there's such just a high floor to hit. The glove will find its way in.
So the Cubs are trying to compete. They'll find a way if he can hit, because Paredes ain't it. That is for darn sure. You got Porter Hodge here, who ended the season closing for the Cubs. Looked pretty good. And for now, seems like the front runner to be the closer. But we'll see. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, right now I think he's penciled in unless they go and sign someone, which, you know, I wouldn't rule out. Like, you never know what they're going to do. Could they get a vet closer? Could they go up and pay up for a high-end closer? Who knows? But they showed a lot of confidence in Porter Hodge, and he got results down the stretch. So, I mean, you come in and get 9 saves like he did, sub-2 ERA, 52 strikeouts in 43 innings. Like, I know his price tag certainly reflects him being a closer, but it's kind of on the lower end of, like, the closures that are currently penciled in. So I think he's a decent buy.
Yep, I like it. I was tweeting earlier, like last week, that there's a ton of fun young catching prospects. We've already hit on a couple. Here's another one, Moises Ballesteros of the Chicago Cubs. Like, Miguel Amaya was supposed to be the dude. Didn't really happen last year. There's really nothing stopping Ballesteros outside of the Cubs organization, I think.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because he's still, if they want to keep him at catcher, he has a ways to go development-wise. They also got Matt Thaiss in there, which is interesting. Does he catch? Like, I don't know. They've got Mikel Amaya penciled as the starter, which not a lot of confidence there. Ballesteros is a below-average defensive catcher. He's a massive frame. And the kind of question is, can he play anywhere else? Because he's 5'7". He'd be the shortest first baseman, I think, in Major League history, at least in the modern era. The bat's good. We know he can hit. He's consistently hit at every stop. It's high contact. It's sneaky power. I mean, he had 19 home runs last year, 44 extra base hits in 124 games. The exit velocities were above average as well. And considering he was 20 years old and reached AAA, that showed some confidence on the Cubs end too, that they pushed him like that. My question is, Are they going to take the loss at defense to try to get this bat in? I think at best he's probably a midseason call-up, but I know he's incredibly popular and certainly worth noting here because a lot of people do believe that he's going to step in and catch. And I'm not sure that's the case. We'll see what they do the rest of the offseason, but it's certainly a negative at on the defensive side right now. And are they willing to sacrifice that for Ballesteros' bat? We'll see.
No, that's a good point. Very good point there. We got two outfielders, Kevin Alcantara and then Owen Casey, or Casey, I apologize if I got it wrong. But people are pretty excited about, especially Owen, based on some of the recent moves by the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that there's the opportunity for one of these guys to step in. We saw Kevin Alcantara already get promoted at the end of last year and get a chance in the majors. He provides the defensive value that Owen Casey doesn't. I'm a lot more confident in Casey's bat. He's got the juice, and Alcantara hits the ball hard, but he's never been able to convert it to game power, just given the amount of ground balls he hits. He's pretty aggressive as well. Casey hits the ball incredibly hard, and he gets the ball in the air, leading to more home run power. He's been a bit of a liability strikeout contact-wise, but that's steadily improved year over year. He shows good OBP skills. I think if the Cubs are probably giving the first crack to somebody, it's Kevin Alcantara, given the aspect of his glove and the fact he's already been in the majors. Owen Casey was added to the 40-man last week, so that's pretty notable as well. Mm-hmm. Where do they find the spot? Like, PCA is going to play center field. You've got Cody Bellinger. Like, I don't know how that shakes out. Like, I've seen rumors they want to potentially trade him. I don't know who would take that contract.
That's crazy.
Ian Happ's going to get a spot. So it could work out. Like, obviously, you've got Seiya Suzuki, too. Mm-hmm. It probably takes an injury to get one of these guys in, but they're both interesting. I think Owen Casey's probably the better hitter long-term. I think Alcantara probably gets the first crack.
Gotcha. All right, St. Louis Cardinals here. A player that we saw a little bit towards the end of last year that went to the AFL to get a little more seasoning. Thomas Sojasi, are we thinking he's the next big infielder for the Cardinals?
I do think he plays every day, and I think he comes out of camp as the opening day second baseman. That's not penciled in on roster resource at the moment, but I do believe that there's a scenario where Brendan Donovan's playing more outfield next year, and that spot goes to Thomas Sojasi. He had a successful AFL. He did everything they wanted to see. It's a contact-oriented profile. He doesn't hit the ball that hard, which is interesting, but he makes up for it with ideal launch angles, which helps, and he's got the ability to get to some sneaky power. He's weird. He doesn't hit with batting gloves. It throws me off every time I watch him. I don't know. It's bizarre. It feels like it's got to not be super comfortable. But the exit velocity data is respectable. 103, 90th is about MLB average. Good contact skills. He's hyper-aggressive. He's going to chase, but he's also going to put a lot of balls in play. You know, he finished out the season on a high note. He struggled the first 2 months. From June forward, numbers were really good last year. And obviously, he got that chance in the majors, as you mentioned. So I think Sojasi does get that shot to play every day out of camp. Certainly, there's more room available given the move of Paul Goldschmidt not being on the roster and Nolan Arenado. Now it looks like he will be traded, which continues to open up spots. And I think Sojasi's that guy that can count on. So, you know, I'm certainly interested in him in kind of a deeper format.
I like it. I like it a lot. You know, they already said Wilson Contreras probably playing more first base with Goldie out of town. We saw Pedro Páez. We saw Ivan Herrera. Herrera maybe the better bat. Páez a better glove. Then we got Jimmy Crooks in the minors. So how do you see this shaking out with St. Louis?
I have no idea because they're so deep at catcher. Yep. But Jimmy Crooks can hit, which I want to mention him here. Like, he may be a 50th round DC grab because his bat is highly impressive. Spent the year in double A last year, hit 321, 410, 498, 11 home runs. His exit velocities are kind of off the charts. He had 9th percentile of 107, which is, you know, that's borderline 70 grade pop. And we don't see that often from a catcher. Crooks is 23. He's progressed well. He makes good contact. He gets on base a lot, doesn't chase, takes a walk. I'm kind of curious how it plays out. He's also a really good defensive catcher. Throughout 33% of attempted base stealers in double A, that's a stellar mark in the minors with the minor league stolen base rules, the way pitchers are. Throwing out 33% of guys stands out to me in a large way. But as you mentioned, you've got Wilson Contreras. He's going to play first base. You've got Ivan Herrera. You've got Pedro Páez. Where does he fit? Great question. But I love Jimmy Crooks. I think he's probably one of the more criminally underrated prospects in the minors, especially from a catching standpoint, because he's good with the glove. He's exceptional with the bat. I kind of just want to take a 50th round shot on him and see if he plays the second half, because it could be a pretty good bat.
That's totally fair, because, yeah, Ivan Herrera and Pedro Páez got their chances last year. So St. Louis, they have depth for a reason, apparently. Last one here, Michael McGreevy on the mound. We talked prospect pitching. Most of them aren't completely stretched out. Dude had almost 175 innings last year between the minors and the big. So that's a big plus in my books if you're taking a chance on a young arm.
Yeah, and McGreevy's not flashy. He's not going to put up huge strikeout totals. But McGreevy is going to give you good ratios, at least respectable enough at the price tag, and he's going to throw innings. And I think that's exactly what this rotation needs. Like, you look at what they've got. They've got a lot of older guys, and it's kind of like, okay, how does this shake out? Maybe they can salary dump one of these guys off. You know, they're going to roll Sonny Gray and Eric Fede at the top. But after that, I think there's enough question marks where Michael McGreevy probably gets in to start the year. He's already got the major league experience. He's pitched well in the majors. Tink Hintz is going to be the flashy name here. He's not remotely close to ready. He's regressed pretty heavily. His injuries are substantial. He ended the year actually with a pretty serious injury, not to the arm. So, you know, I don't really know how that's going to shake out. But I look at McGreevy and say, there's an easy opportunity for innings. If you want a prospect that can give you a potential 150 innings, McGreevy might be the best chance to do that. And I don't think he's going very high in DCs. And, you know, while it's not flashy, it's a good bet.
Yeah, McGreevy is going at 484. So not bad at all for the innings you can get at that point in time. Pittsburgh Pirates, they have a knack for these young pitchers recently. And Paul Skenes, Jared Jones, Skenes makes it look easy, but not bad. What are our thoughts on Bubba Chandler?
He's elite. I mean, is he going to be Paul Skenes elite? Probably not, but I do think he could be better than Jared Jones. It's the kind of pitcher we're looking at. I mean, just an incredible athlete. People may know his story, but I mean, he was a incredible quarterback as well. He was committed to play quarterback at Clemson, who at the time was coming off a national championship. He was going to play baseball and football there. That's obviously notable. And he was going to hit and pitch at Clemson. And he started as a two-way player in the pros. He played shortstop and pitched in his first two pro seasons. Finally gave up hitting, and the results just, he prospered in the mound. And we saw that this year. He's progressively gotten better with his command. He threw strike, like the strike throwing command was the biggest question mark coming in this year, and he answered. He threw strikes at an above average 65% rate, which I love to see. The fastball is probably 70 grade. It sits 97, 98 with elite IVB. Like, it's a low release height, so hard to pick up. He has a changeup that, you know, tunnels exceptionally well, gets good fading action. 17 inches of arm side is wild. And he has a slider that also might be a 70 grade pitch too. It's a 87, 90 mile an hour gyro slider. I think few pitchers have three pitches as good as Chandler. And then you consider the fact that he also added the command to it. That's obviously notable. He got better all year. The results were fantastic. 120 innings, 3.08 ERA. Factor in from June 1st forward, 91 innings and a 2.27 ERA, 115 strikeouts to 22 walks. Chandler's ready. He made it AAA. He probably gets the Skenes kind of treatment, month in the minor leagues, but he's going to be in this rotation, and it's going to be a lot of fun at the top with Skenes, Jones, and Chandler. He's an electric arm that's, yeah, he doesn't have anything else to prove in the minors at this point.
Yeah, they could just hit. Maybe this guy will help them hit. Nick York got called up this past year, and for a little cup of coffee, saw some really good contact skills in the minors. What should we expect from York heading through 2025?
Yeah, York's interesting because I know we see they've already got I'm losing his name at second Gonzalez. Base. Nick Gonzalez, yeah. I don't think Nick Gonzalez is going to be the guy. He's not shown them anything yet to this point to make me believe he can be the second baseman. York's also gotten some run in the outfield, which is interesting. I think that's a little bit notable, but I think he's the front runner to start at second base in Pittsburgh, given that he came up and was solid. He made major strides with power last year. His exit velocities jumped substantially. He had above average EVs, 91 mile an hour average EV is notable for a player like York, who's always run low EVs, and the contact rates, 79% overall, 86% in zone. That'll play. You know, York is pretty impressive against all pitch types. He has good pitch recognition. He's not going to be super flashy, but I do think that if York plays every day, he can probably provide some sneaky value for you in a middle infield spot. Maybe he gets some outfield eligibility too, which would make this a lot of fun. I think he's more than ready to take that spot from Nick Gonzalez. Not worried about that at all. And I know they like York a lot internally.
Yeah, no, I've heard some big buzz there. I'm hoping Gonzalez gets a little more run, but we'll wait and see on that one. You got a couple more guys here, Braxton Ashcraft, Thomas Harrington, to round out the Pirates.
Yeah, they have a wealth of arms in the system, and Ashcraft is very impressive. He just can't stay healthy. Injuries have kind of derailed his entire career. Threw just 73 innings last year, but when he's on the mound between double and triple A, the results were very impressive. 2.84 ERA for Ashcraft, 77 Ks in 73 innings. He's a heavy strike thrower, excellent command, mid-90s fastball with really good traits, good slider, good secondaries all around, but it's just, can Ashcraft stay healthy? He'll be 25 next year, so I'm not sure, you know, how the health track record holds up, but if he is healthy, he's going to find a spot. And Thomas Harrington is just, he's kind of the opposite of the flashy elite guys. I think he flies a bit under the radar. Former walk-on to Campbell, which, you know, Campbell's a smaller D2 school. So they may be D1. I may be mistaking that D1 for baseball.
Camels.
Sure are. But, oh, I mean, a walk-on, and he just blossomed. 36th overall pick in 2022. He put up really good results this year. 2.61 ERA in 117 innings. 115 strikeouts, 19 walks. I think his command is some of the best in the minors. Fastball, 92-93. It doesn't blow it by anybody, but tops 96. Low release, good IVB, good secondaries. I think Harrington's like the pitchability guy that this rotation really needs, like as a back in the rotation anchor. They haven't really had that. And I think that Harrington provides it, and he's up pretty quickly this year.
Beautiful. Let's head to Cincinnati here. A couple of starters we saw at times last year. Rhett Lauder, was a lot of hype behind him. Connor Phillips had a little bit of run as well. What are we thinking for Lauder and Phillips? Because it's two pitchers that I see so much pitch to contact that terrifies me in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think that is concerning. Lauder's obviously the buzzy one here, where he came up and was very solid. I mean, he did much better than I thought he would in his major league debut. Six starts, a 1.17 ERA in 30 innings. Struck out just 22, though, so lower strikeout numbers. And post All-Star break, he made a couple tweaks in the arsenal, and in the minors had a 0.51 ERA in 35 minor league innings post All-Star break. It's a mid-90s fastball. It's, you know, doesn't have traits to write home about. He does throw a sinker as well with more arm side. Changeup plays well. You're right, though. He doesn't miss enough bats where it's kind of like, like it's going to blow up on you. And I think he is prone to have those blow-up starts. But I think Lauder induces enough weak contact where it's like, okay, this can play. Phillips is kind of the opposite. He had probably the worst season possible in 2024. He was terrible. He had an 8.01 ERA and a whip over 2 in 19 AAA starts. So bad that they sent him to the development list. And he literally just sat at the complex, and they were just trying to figure out like what they could make work. I mentioned his name because there is some buzz coming out of the AFL. The numbers were okay, but Phillips' command is not there at all. Saw the starts where we saw him in the AFL, it's not there. He walks significantly too many batters. He's prone to run a walk rate north of 15% pretty easily in the majors, and that's just not going to work. I like the stuff. I mean, the fastball is good. It's upper 90s, good traits to it. Sweeper's a plus pitch, in my opinion. But when you can't throw strikes, I have major concerns. And I'm kind of going to push back here on the buzz for Phillips and his ability to potentially be in the rotation next year, just given that there's still a lot of things to work out for. I know the surface numbers were decent in the AFL, struck guys out, had a respectable ERA, but I'm not really seeing Phillips being a viable major league starter with what I saw in the AFL. So I think he's one where just kind of push back a little and say I would advise against drafting him, because I know that there was a little hype from the AFL.
Oh, there definitely was. So I'm glad to get those comments from you on this, because he sits around there around, you know, 550 to 680p, and you're sitting there going, depth of pitching, and this, probably not the best idea. All right, let's head to the NL West here, and we'll start with the defending World Series champion, because just what they need is more depth. Dalton Rushing, this is a fun name because, again, another young prospect who can hit very well. Will Smith does not play every day. That's been a proven thing in their system. But they're also working rushing out in the outfield, they've said yes lately. So what's your thoughts on Dalton Rushing? Because I've seen him going earlier and earlier in drafts lately.
Yeah, I mean, his bat's elite. It's just, can he find a spot? And that's kind of my concern. It's obviously, you have to be absolutely incredible to crack this lineup. Mm-hmm. They got Tommy Edman. He came back and looked good all postseason towards the end of the regular season. So that's a guy that's going to fill a spot. I think he plays center field for them. They obviously could be in the hunt for Juan Soto. They've got the money. Yeah, who knows how that shakes out. They've also got a guy named Will Smith who's pretty good behind the plate. Mm-hmm. I will say that Will Smith has been declining.
Yep.
And I think he could use more days off. They catch Smith a lot. And believe it or not, he's about to be 30 years old. It feels like he was just one of the young catchers in the game. Now he's going to be 30 and could probably use a few more days off a week. I think your hope for fantasy purposes is that Rushing catches 1 to 2 days a week and finds a way into the lineup another way, either via outfield or DH is obviously full with Shohei Ohtani. But the bat with Rushing is just so incredible. Like, since he debuted, when he was drafted, he arguably has been one of the best hitters in the minors. Like, his ex-Wobicon is off the charts. When he makes contact, he does damage. His contact rates are really good. I mean, 77% overall, 83% in zonal play, sub 20% chase rate, very high OBPs, 9th percentile EV of 106, puts the ball in the air 63% of the time, gets to the pool side. He checks just kind of every box. He's progressed as a catcher. I think he's serviceable enough behind the plate to catch. The interesting thing is they picked up Austin Barnes' option. I know it was cheap. Barnes is not good. I mean, Barnes is going to be 35. Mm-hmm. He's really shown nothing to make me believe that he will take plate appearances from Rushing at the catcher spot. I know he did catch Smith the days that he was off, but I'm believing that Dalton Rushing can step on this roster in May and hit his way into a mostly everyday role. I like the other options in the outfield still. Like, I still like Andy Páez a lot, which, yeah, you know, that would be the spot Rushing would fill. And James Altman is still solid. Part of me wonders if Altman falters, they shift Páez over to right field and put Rushing in left field. I think that's an option that could work. But ultimately, it's all about finding the at-bats. No questioning how good Dalton Rushing is. But the enticing thing with him for fantasy purposes is having catcher eligibility, but also playing more often away from the position.
Yep, 100%. Like, I love the kid. It's all about playing time. Maybe a crochet trade happens, and not saying he goes, but Páez or somebody goes to clear out some space and see where it goes. And you mentioned Tommy Edman coming back. So we've got Alex Freeland here, shortstop, can run, a little bit of power here. What are our expectations for Freeland? Because that is one thing. The Dodgers middle infield has had injuries in years past.
Yeah, and so I think that's the case where if there are injuries, Freeland kind of fits. He's versatile around the infield, which, you know, helps his stock. At least, like, he could be that Dodgers utility man. I mean, Gavin Lux feels like he's in kind of a prove it year where he's got to show something at this point. Yeah. I mean, he's had the flashes for a couple of weeks and everybody's like, oh man, Gavin Lux. But for the most part, he hasn't been great. Maybe they fill that spot, you know, another way. It's highly possible that they, you know, if they bring in Willy Adames, then, you know, does Mookie play second base? Yeah, I mean, that's a real possibility. But, you know, I look at Freeland as the ultimate utility guy that the Dodgers have liked in the past. And, you know, he's really good at the plate. He made major strides this year. He's top 100 prospect, or at least borderline, with really good contact skills, very low chase rate. The average exit velocities and 9th percentile, close to MLB average, but he gets the ball in the air often. It's kind of the profile where I say the Dodgers can make it work. He made a AAA, and maybe he's a, you know, June, July midseason call-up. But even at that, I would guess the price tag's so low on Freeland that, you know, it won't hurt you to take a deep shot because you're throwing a lot of darts there anyway. Yeah. And Freeland could be a guy that fits in this Dodgers lineup.
No, I like it. I like it quite a bit because they do need help there. San Diego Padres, talking about outfield help, they need it all the time. They were starting David Peralta at one point last year. And let's all be real, jerks from Profar, back-to-back All-Stars, probably not likely. Yeah. So Tirso Ornelas, Ornelas, does that make sense as a guy to target in drafts right now?
I think so, because it seems like that of any of their prospects, like he's the one that's most MLB ready. He reached AAA back in 2022, so it's kind of been like one of those prospect fatigue types. He signed with the Padres in 2017, so it's been a long journey. But Ornelas did make some major strides in 2024. He had a really good AAA season. I know we take the PCL with a grain of salt, but he hit 23 homers, 49 extra base hits, had put up a max EV of 114 with a ninth percentile near 105. So there was more power than we had previously seen. He also showed some pretty notable strides with contact, 79% overall and 88% in zone. So you like to see that, at least with the contact side of things, where we see the improvement and know there's some juice in the bat. Ornelas, I think, could find a spot. He's a left-handed bat, could at least find a platoon role in this lineup early on. Totally depends on what they do. But as you mentioned, this team was struggling to find outfielders. I don't see a reason why Tirso Ornelas cannot find his way into this lineup. So he's just might be a sneaky one to take a shot on.
I like that quite a bit. Another guy here, Omar Cruz. Looks like he might be a bullpen guy in the minors here. Is this we don't get to talk about a lot of bullpen prospects. So this is intriguing. We saw Jeremiah Estrada blow up for them. What are we thinking on Omar Cruz?
You know, he's interesting because he was kind of used in a role where he like piggybacked. He threw 86 innings in 2024. He was really impressive all year. He had a near 33% strikeout rate, 19% swinging strike rate. He was actually somebody that the Padres plucked in the AAA Rule 5 portion, which we don't typically see those guys pan out. He initially signed with the Padres back in 2017. They traded him to Pittsburgh in the Joe Musgrove deal, and they get him back in that Rule 5 portion of the minor league. He is just a unique arm that I really like, where I think he could fill some innings for them. Maybe he doesn't, you know, fit the back end of a bullpen. He might be a spot starter, but there could be some value there just given the unique traits of his arsenal. It's pretty solid fastball, even though it sits around 92. He gets a lot of whiffs with it. His curveball is nasty. Had a 50% whiff rate last year. Really good offering. The changeup plays extremely well off the fastball as well. You know, I kind of chalked up Cruz being an old guy in AAA for most of the year. I'm like, okay, just like whatever. This guy's, you know, 25, 26 years old. It doesn't matter. But he continued to perform. He throws strikes. Had one of the higher strikeout minus walk rates in the minors. You know, I think there's something here, maybe in a deeper sense. Does he fill a starter's role? Yeah, I mean, obviously quite a good rotation. They're prone to go out and get somebody else, just knowing what the Padres do. But I do think Omar Cruz is a sneaky guy that's ready for the majors, that he kind of pops off and you're like, where did this guy come from? So yeah, I think he's just worth mentioning as a, you know, very, very deep guy where the Padres have those pitchers that pop off and maybe Cruz is the next one of those.
Yep, always good to know late, especially if not for DCs when call-ups happen throughout your fab leagues. All right, Arizona Diamondbacks. These three names are names that most even non-prospect guys like myself know who they are. And I'm very intrigued. You got Jordan Lawler, who I thought was going to make Eugenio Suarez get DFA'd before that blew up. You got Adrian Del Castillo, who is, to me, a much better hitter than Moreno, but defensively not even close. And Yelber Diaz, who I thought should have got more run in the bigs, but did not last year. So what's your thoughts on these three guys who I think all have impacts this year, but to what level? I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, they should. I mean, all three of them should really have near everyday roles. And, you know, I know obviously the catcher spot, they've got Gabby Moreno. He's fine. But I think that Adrian Del Castillo can find his way in several ways. I mean, playing first base, he could DH. I mean, it seems like Christian Walker's not going to come back. Pavin Smith is fine, but you'd much rather have the impact of an Adrian Del Castillo there, who's got the juice, who's shown that he can hit in the majors already and just put up one of the better seasons we saw in AAA. You know, he had 30 home runs combined between majors and AAA, OPS north of 1,000. He was actually an elite pedigree draft guy too. You know, entering his senior year, or I guess his junior year at Miami in 2021, he was talked about potentially going top five in that draft. So it's not a come out of nowhere guy. He had those struggles in his draft year, wind up going second round, and it's paid off substantially. You know, the EVs are incredibly good contact skills, patient hitter, low chase. So I think Del Castillo's bat works his way in. You know, Lawler's interesting because he just can't stay healthy. Like, he's got all these injuries that keep piling up, and it's like, you know, how does this work out? I don't know. He's been playing the Dominican Winter League. He's not performed great. I've been long been the lower on Lawler than most people in the prospect space. He just has never shown the contact skills that I thought he needed to succeed. You know, you look at the underlying data, the EVs they're below average. He can have the moments where he showed the ability to get to higher in batted balls. For the most part, it's lower EVs. Like, I kind of just see him as a 50 hit, 50 power. He does have speed, though. Like, that's probably his best asset. 70 grade speed. He's successful on the base paths. I think at peak, you're probably looking at like a 20 home run, 30 stolen base type, which is extremely valuable. But he's got to stay on the field, and he's got to make enough contact. So is this the year we finally see Lawler put it together? I hope so. But still have question marks surrounding that. And, man, Yulber Diaz, I agree with you. Like, why did he not pitch more? He was nails all year. I mean, very strong. He made substantial improvements with his command, which that was what he had to do. He struggled to throw strikes prior to 2024. And he did that. The arsenal's good. I mean, he's touching 99 at times, you know, upper 90s fastball. Stuff's there. I mean, it can play. High swinging strike rate, good CSW, league average strike throwing. Like, that'll play. He did have that finger injury in August. Should be fine, though. Not too worried about that. I think Diaz finds his way back into a rotation spot, honestly.
Yep, 100% with you on that one. Looking forward to seeing what the D-backs can do once again to stop the Dodgers. All right, the Giants. We've got two teams to go here. And Giants, obviously, I know them very well, but you know the prospects better than I likely. But I even know this one, Bryce Eldridge. I think he should start on opening day at first base over Lamont Wade Jr., but I'm very biased and need some pump, need some life on this team. So what are we expecting from Bryce Eldridge?
Yeah, I mean, he's the only reason to knock him and say he shouldn't be up on the opening day roster is his age. He just turned 20, but I honestly don't care because he's their best option. He made notable improvements with the contact rates all year. Strikeout rate trended downward, which was notable. We know he can mash. I mean, he had 23 homers, 27 doubles, two triples last year, and an impressive slash, 292, 374, 516. As a 19-year-old that reached AAA at that. And then they sent him out to the AFL for more work. I've gotten questions like people have questioned, like, I actually believe that Eldridge is going to be in the lineup next year. And yes, because you don't send a hitter to AAA and then the AFL where he didn't miss any time if you don't believe that this guy needs the reps for the next season. And I think that's absolutely the case. Power's elite. I mean, 107 mile an hour ninth percentile is incredible. Puts it in the air often. He's aggressive, but, you know, I mean, he makes it work. Below average chase rate, or better than average chase rates, and good end zone contact. I think it's a future 30 home run bat that gives you good average. I think he's, I mean, what else is he going to do to AAA pitching, and especially in the PCL? It's like, he's going to waste his time there, and I think you're probably looking at a call-up 2 to 3 months into the season. I don't think that's crazy to say, even though he will be 20 for pretty much the entire 2025 season.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it, let's put it that way. You mentioned the above average not chasing by Eldridge. This is the opposite for Grant McRae. The plate discipline, not great, but there is some pop and some speed, which has, you know, got a little bit of fantasy interest. What's your thoughts on Grant McRae? Because the Giants lost Conforto, but they still have a lot of mouths to feed in the outfield.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, it seems like just based on the run that McRae got at the end of last year, pending something crazy happening in the offseason, that McRae potentially gets some at-bats in the outfield in a strong side platoon situation. Does it last all year? I don't know, but he did come up and he popped 5 home runs. He's got speed. He's going to steal bases, but the man struggles with contact and to get on base, and that's obviously notable. I listed him here just from the standpoint of, I think that early season run is important, especially to have those at-bats in the DC format. You can obviously replace those later in the year with a prospect that gets called up, something like that. But I do think McRae probably is going late enough where he may be worth a shot, and you hope that he gives you some power speed early on, or at least in a pinch if you need him. You know, you don't want to start a Grant McRae in your outfield, but, you know, it could be where you do need him in a spot, and at least he provides something, even though it's not going to be batting average or OBP. He's not going to get on base at all.
I see the concerns, but there's also some upsides. I'm kind of like torn on him quite a bit. And then lastly here, you got Landon Roop, who I'm a big fan of, the spot starts, the bullpen work, the swingman work we saw out of him. I'm kind of optimistic as a potential fifth starter for the Giants at least.
Yeah, and you know, he's technically not prospect eligible. He went 0.1 innings over the limit, but he was worth mentioning here because he's still a young player just out of prospect status that I think has a lot of intrigue. He's getting some buzz. I know Eno was hyping him up a little bit. So his stock may continue to rise, but I really like what Roop brings to the table. It's a solid arsenal of pitches. Yeah, he's got an incredible curveball. He's got good command. Fastball will play as well. And I think he's just being a little bit underrated. Walk rates are a little higher than you like to see. I do attribute some of that in AAA to the ABS system in the first half of the year. 12% walk rate in 50 major league innings last year. Still a touch high, but I think we will see that improve some. I think Roop's a sneaky target where he could be in that fifth rotation spot and provide really good ratios and about a strikeout an inning, and that has value.
Yes, has a ton of value. So I'm a big fan of seeing that as well. Let's go to the Colorado Rockies. Wrap things up here. Brendan Rodgers gets non-tendered out of nowhere, and everyone starts saying Adele Amador. Not everyone. Many did. So what's your thoughts here? You got a slight cup of coffee before getting hurt last year.
Yeah, and it was a weird position to call him up. I didn't really see why they were doing that, especially considering he was struggling in AAA, but Amador has a spot now, and it feels like they've just given the red carpet out for him, considering they just let Brendan Rodgers walk. They didn't tender him a contract. They got Kyle Farmer. I don't think Kyle Farmer is going to block somebody that's going to come in and be much better. And, you know, despite the ups and downs of Amador, still has really impressive content. He's got speed and he's got sneaky pop. So looking at a prospect like an Adiel Amador, you know, coming off the 2023 season, he had looked like he had the best hit tool in the minors. And then this year it was like, okay, where did that go? But he had 14 homers. He stole 35 bags. He's obviously going to hit for a higher average. It was a contact rate of 80% in 2024, which was down substantially from the 88% in the previous year, but still really good contact, low chase rates. He's going to take walks, going to get on base and steal bags. And I have to look at this profile now and say, all right, the Rockies have lined you up. Like, you better take advantage of it this time and run with that spot at second base, which I don't think Kyle Farmer's the guy for long. Maybe Amador's in AAA for a short period, but I think that he gets 500 plus plate appearances as the Rocky second baseman.
Yeah, Kyle Farmer should not be the guy for long almost anywhere. So let's hope that is the way, because Amador's pretty cheap. That's going to obviously start coming up the more talking takes place there. Chase Dolander. This is a name I remember hearing a few years ago, drafted in 2023, first round pick. Pitchers in Colorado are always fun though, Chris. So what are we thinking here with Dolander?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the one that beats Coors Field. To what level is that? That's still a major question mark. But he's the most talented arm that they've had in their organization since John Gray, and he's significantly better than John Gray. And John Gray was a third overall pick, pretty hyped pitching prospect back in the day. Dolander is elite. And if he was not in the Rockies org, I think he'd be in that conversation for top pitching prospect in baseball, because that's the kind of arm that he is. Threw 118 innings this year, 2.59 ERA. That's obviously impressive. 169 strikeouts to 47 walks is just wild. Fastball is elite. I mean, it's a 70 grade offering. Among pitchers that threw 500 fastballs in the minors, only four had a swinging strike rate on that pitch above 20% or higher. Dolander was one of them. I mean, it's just wild. He threw 1,200 fastballs at that. So a couple of those other guys were relievers. I mean, it's just stupid how unique the fastball is at 96, 97. It's about as flat of a vertical approach angle as you can get, making it deceptive, hard to hit, 5'5" release height, gets good arm side movement as well. You're looking at a curveball, high spin, two plane break, upper 70s pitch. He works a slider cutter, upper 80s. I think that changeup's underrated as well, had up to 20 inches of horizontal fade on it. It's a good four pitch arsenal. He's got the ingredients to beat Coors. You listen to him talk about pitching and it's interesting. He's kind of with the mantra, aim down the middle and let it go, which is kind of wild, but his pitches are so good that it works. Like, he can make that work. Can he make it work against major league hitting? Maybe. Can he make it work in Coors? We'll see. I think that Dolander is going to get 100 innings in the majors this year because he's going to absolutely destroy Double A if he goes back. And they don't want to send an arm like this to the PCL. I think he's in Colorado for at least half the year, if not more. And I think even though it's a Rockies pitcher, I know that there's that stigma. I think Dolander can be highly valuable. So I'm really curious to see how the stuff plays in Coors. He's going to have to figure that out. But it's one of the best pitching prospects in the minors pretty easily.
That is great to hear. Someone's going to beat it one of these days. So it'd be fun if it was sooner rather than later. Last one we got here, Jordan Beck got his cup of coffee last year, did not live up to the hype. But again, a lot of factors played into that most likely. So what are your thoughts on Jordan Beck in the 2025?
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting one that I think should take an outfield spot. I mean, it's just a weird situation right now. We know Brenton Doyle is going to get run in center field. They've got Nolan Jones coming back to left field, but he wasn't healthy last year. Who knows if he's healthy enough to play every day in 2025? We assume so. But Sam Hilliard, like, I'm looking at that spot in right field, and I think that's the spot that we think Jordan Beck can take. Beck's a good hitter. He didn't show much in his major league debut to kind of exude a lot of confidence. He hit sub 200, slugged below 200, but there's a solid bat here where he's got respectable contact skills. He's got the juice. I think he's got above average or better power, and he's got some sneaky speed too, where he can steal you some bags. So I look at a Jordan Beck and think that this is probably the year that he takes that spot in the outfield and runs with it. Now, you know, how good is it? How is he hit for average? We saw him strike out 35% of the time in the majors. I don't think he'll do that again. I think that he will at least hit 260, 250-ish, which is fine considering the other skills and probably as late as he's going, where there's some value to be had there with Jordan Beck.
I love it. I love it. Well, there you go. There's 15 National League teams, prospects and all. Before we leave, these can be literally just list off the names. You can go as deep as you want, or you don't have to at all. Who are your top three National League prospects that should be impacts in 2025?
Yeah, and we've discussed them all. So Dylan Cruz, Andrew Painter, and Bubba Chandler, I think, are the best National League prospects that stand the chance to, you know, win that Rookie of the Year. So I think they will have the biggest impacts of any of those names we discussed.
And just for those people that play dynasties and aren't not worried, just 2025, give us a couple NL prospects to watch for in Dynasty down the line.
Yeah, so Leo DeVries, just saw him in the AFL. He's incredibly young, but he's one of the top prospects in the game, and he might wind up having the skills to take the top prospect spot. Now, it's kind of crazy I didn't mention him, but Preller mentioned that he could debut in 2025. Nice. I don't believe it. He just turned 18 like 2 weeks ago, so that would be insane. But, you know, crazier things have happened. J.J. Weatherholt that the Cardinals drafted in the first round, his skill set, you know, he's going to move fast next year. He may debut at the end of the year, probably not somebody that you want to draft, but somebody to keep on your watch list, at least obviously for Dynasty and maybe even Fab this year. And then you got two younger guys in the Azaire Hope with the Dodgers, where another one we saw in the AFL, his combination of exit velocity data, chase rate, and end zone contact, use Z-score all those, he would be the top prospect in baseball just based on those three numbers. He's got absurd upside. He's a good athlete. Hope make it push pretty aggressively next year. We'll see. He's not going to make the majors. Young kid. I think he's still 19. He'll turn 20 in January. But somebody to keep your eye on. And then Jesus Mate, a TSL guy with the Brewers. We know that they have a good track record with doing this. They push guys aggressively. Mate's probably somebody that skips the complex. Go straight to single A next year. He will be 17 until mid-May. But his skill set, and I know everybody will always say, DSL numbers, take him with a grain of salt. Yes, absolutely. His numbers were good, but his under-the-hood numbers were as good as any DSL prospect that we've seen in years. I mean, you think of the top prospects that came through the DSL, Jesus Mate's, you know, underlying metrics with the exit velocity data, the contact rates, the chase rate. It's absurd. So Mate has the chance to potentially be that top prospect in baseball too, so watch out for him as well.
Well, awesome, my friend. I always appreciate chatting with you, catching up with you. Your wealth of prospect knowledge is outstanding. Before we head out of here, why don't you remind everybody where they can find you and all the cool work you got going on?
Sure. Yep, you can find me Twitter, Blue Sky, I should probably make them the same, but Twitter's Chris Clegg, MILB, Blue Skies, just Chris Clegg. I guess I wanted that because I could never get it on any other platform. So just my name made it work, but post everything there to both. I'm still posting on Twitter, still, and we'll continue to do that. But DynastyDugout.com, find all the work and the Tool Shed Pod. You with Eric Cross, which you'll probably hear on the show.
Yep,
if not episode. Before me, after me.
Next episode, yes. Yeah. The next episode will be Chris or Eric Cross doing the America League prospect. So stick on to that and have some fun. But again, for some beyond reason, you know, he's got way more followers than I do. So if you're not following him and you listen to the show, you should be. But this is a one-of-a-kind guy. And Chris, as always, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
All right, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 702. Catch you all next time.